Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for October 23rd, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find my work in page 10 of the Torch column each and every week, where I have a brand new column tackling a variety of issues in the pro wrestling industry. And you can find me here each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on Wrestling Night in America, where we like to hear from you via the phones, 515-605-9345, or via email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We talk about the big events in pro wrestling. So tonight, we're going to touch on Saturday night's premium live event from the NXT brand, Halloween Havoc, that aired on Peacock. We'll also talk a little bit about Crown Jewel and Full Gear, two major events that are coming up in the month of November. Next week will be our Crown Jewel preview show, where we will go match by match through that card, discuss the build-up, discuss the possible results, and all that comes with it. That is next Sunday night here on Wrestling Night in America. Tonight, to join me as my co-host, a member of the PW Torch family, as usual, PWTorch.com contributor, Joel Donnell. Joel, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Thanks for having me back on, Greg. It's excellent to be back here talking with you. It's been a while since I've done a podcast, so I was really excited when you reached out, and I'm excited to talk a little bit about NXT.
Excellent. And that's where we'll begin tonight, NXT's Halloween Havoc event from Saturday night. The show began with a North American title ladder match in which Wes Lee became your new North American champion, defeating the likes of Von Wagner, Carmelo Hayes, Oro Mensah, and Nathan Frazier. This was a really strong ladder match. In fact, I think I liked this ladder match better than I liked Bianca Belair versus Bayley, which was the last ladder match we had from the WWE brand at Extreme Rules. And I'm a huge fan of Wes Lee. I think I like him better in a tag team, although he's got a lot of potential as a singles. The woe is me storyline that they've run with him since they fired his partner hasn't really endeared him, I don't think, to the fan base at large. But I'm interested to see what they do now with Wes Lee, that they seem to be giving him a singles push and giving him the North American title here.
Yeah, I mean, this was a really good ladder match, like you said. I mean, it had a lot of the high spots and everything that you would look for, in this multi-person match. But to what you were saying about Wes Lee, they really pushed it hard. Vic Joseph was saying that this is the first singles championship that Wes Lee has ever won in his career. And it really felt like it was actually an emotional moment for him. He was selling it really well, climbing up that ladder slowly where you're really expecting somebody else to jump in and steal the moment from him. He actually gets to the top and gets it. And it was cool that online they posted a backstage embrace between him and Shawn Michaels that felt like a really genuine moment there in seeing Wes Lee trying to take it to the next level.
Wes Lee just has this likability factor about him. I think that's one of his real strong points in connecting with the audience, and I'm hoping that they explore that a little more with him now that he's got a title around his waist. The other thing that really struck me about this match, and I made this argument last week, Carmelo Hayes, I think the biggest star in this match as they are pushed right now, mm-hmm. but it always felt to me like Carmelo Hayes winning the North American title again would be it would not be a step forward for him. And he's a guy on the short list of NXT talent who people could really see on the main roster in the next 3 to 6 months. And so for him to win the North American title, a title he's already won, he's had a full run with that, it would seem to be kind of a step back. But also now that he doesn't have the championship, he doesn't have that ready-made feud or anything like that. Where do you see Carmelo Hayes going from here? Does he stay on the NXT brand over the long term, or do you think that he, by not winning the title here, does that kind of clear him space to go to the main roster soon?
Well, that's where my mind was at the conclusion of the match, where they made you think also Carmelo Hayes had a chance of re-winning that championship. But like you mentioned, it would feel kind of redundant, like a lateral move to win that championship again, whereas I think that there's potential there actually to bring him to the main roster and put him on Raw or SmackDown and give him a legit push there and just see how far you can take it with this guy. Because I feel that, you know, NXT is a lot of young talent, and they get them from a lot of the same types of places. And Carmelo Hayes is one of the few guys who really does stand out there as far as his in-ring ability, but especially his charisma is just like a step over a lot of the other people while they're still trying to find their identity and find their way. And so Carmelo Hayes doesn't – it just doesn't seem like a Carmelo Hayes, Bron Breakker, you know, type of feud seems to be in the mix right now. It just doesn't feel right for them to go against each other. And so it just seems to make sense to me that he's kind of played out, you know, what he can do in NXT. And I think that it's time to make that next step in going to the main roster.
The other thing that really stood out to me about this match is Nathan Frazer. I mean, he just seems to have a different speed, a different gear than anyone else. And to me, he was the star of this match. How does NXT harness that? You know, they don't the cruiserweight title is not really a thing anymore, which would have been great for Frazier, at least give him something to sink his teeth into, give him something to do. Obviously not North American champion. So do you see him coming out of this perhaps with a feud with Wesley? Or how does NXT take advantage of just everything that Frazier brings to the table that is so different than so many others on the roster, and yet is that skill set that WWE and NXT haven't really shown in the past, granted under different management, that they really know how to take advantage of?
Yeah, I mean, Nathan Frazier, the former Ben Carter, is going to be a really curious case here because, you know, there was an opportunity where he could have signed either with AEW or WWE, and he made the decision to go with WWE. And a lot of people were really surprised at that at the time. And I think that had he gone to AEW, I mean, he really would have just been another kind of those smaller athletic guys, where they already have a ton of people who can do a lot of those high spots and really cool things. Whereas Nathan Frazier being in NXT really stands out as a unique talent because of all the different things that he can do. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how far can this guy go? You know, is he just kind of another one of those smaller athletic guys who doesn't really climb up the card on the main roster, or have things really changed at this point? You know, is Triple H going to see more in Nathan Frazier as, you know, can I push this guy to some degree? And, you know, what is that type of level? And I think that, you know, he definitely could, you know, feud with Wesley and go for the NXT North American Championship. You know, at some point I could see him on the main roster, you know, going for one of those, you know, middle championships of like U.S. title or Intercontinental. Don't know about a world champion at this point in time. But they definitely need to find a unique way to market Nathan Frazier and get him out there, because he does stand out above the rest because he is so unique in his athleticism.
I think the best main roster comp for him right now is Ricochet, and I'm not sure if that's a great thing for him. You know, Ricochet has shown that he has staying power on the main roster. He's in a role that is very valuable, where you're kind of occasionally a secondary champion or secondary championship title contender, but there is really a ceiling with that level of player that Ricochet is, and we'll have to see if, you know, Nathan Frazier can break out beyond that. I think there was hope the first few weeks. It looked like Ricochet was perhaps going to have a larger role under Triple H's management, but that hasn't come to bear yet. But, you know, there's still time. So it's more of an incomplete, I think, at this point than a failing grade right now for Ricochet under new management. But we haven't seen a lot that a lot's going to change either. With Triple H in charge in terms of any kind of push for Ricochet. The next thing we got was Toxic Attraction's Haunted Misadventures in Searching for Alba Fire. And, you know, it reminded me of the haunted house with Cameron Grimes from a few years back on Halloween Havoc, which was pretty well received, I think. I think he was Dexter Loomis. He was doing something with at the time. And I think there was even a comment by one of the Toxic Attraction women that this looked familiar, and I'm not sure if that was a reference to the haunted house from a few years back with Cameron Grimes. But, you know, something like this on a Halloween Havoc show, you know, you're going to get. I really had very low expectations for the segment, and I guess the expectations were kind of met. I thought that the acting was a little better than I expected, and again, that's low expectations set on my part probably for Toxic Attraction. But, you know, there were a couple times I chuckled during this, like, and so I guess that's a victory for me. You know, the thing with this is I think the haunted house motif fit the Dexter Loomis character. There are certain characters that fits. I'm not sure that Alba Fire is the character that it works for. And maybe I just don't know enough about what their intention is with the Alba Fire character, but to have her, you know, playing around in this haunted house, luring Toxic Attraction to it, and setting forth all of these, not demons, but these characters in this haunted house to torture Toxic Attraction, you know, mentally and emotionally while they're there. I don't know that it really fit Alba Fire to do it. It did seem kind of shoehorned in here, but, you know, it was I guess I got some cheap laughs out of it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who watched it and you know, like the B-movie aspect of it. I mean, it's not all that different from what we have seen in NXT. It can be a little more colorful, cartoonish in that type of way. And you know, that seems to be a lot of the audience that they attract who likes that type of stuff. And then for a lot of people, you know, this was a really cheesy, you know, thing that didn't really work, didn't really fit into the story, and it didn't really help out Alba Fire when we got to the actual match. The idea is that she invited Toxic Attraction and Mandy Rose to come to this haunted house, and I assume to take out Toxic Attraction so she can have just a legitimate one-on-one match with Mandy Rose, and obviously, you know, these ghouls and characters weren't able to get the job done. You know, same as you, Greg, I mean, there was a lot of things that, I mean, it was entertaining, you know. It definitely was interesting to look at how they put together this haunted house with these different characters and stuff. And might I say, I've been to some haunted houses this spooky season, and the costumes and outfits on this were not up to par to some of the places that I've been to. So I think they could have done a little bit more to make it, I guess, a little bit more realistic, but also it's very tongue-in-cheek. In the fact that, you know, we're supposed to buy into this, but obviously it's a pretty ridiculous concept altogether.
Yeah, for sure. And the tricks in the trees did not stop there. The second match was Apollo Crews defeating Grayson Waller in a casket match. The finish was sort of teased with Crews going into the casket and then the lights going out. He disappears. He comes back with Druids and another casket, and eventually puts the finishing touches on Grayson Waller here. A good match, but again, we have the metaphysical with Apollo Crews getting involved. And I guess with his character who can kind of see the future in NXT, it makes a little more sense that this is the finish to this match, I guess, than for me, Alba Fire in a haunted house. But there's going to be people who poo-poo this and who don't like this for Crews, and I get that. I totally get that. But Apollo Crews gets the victory over Grayson Waller. What did you think of that aspect of the match with Crews sort of disappearing, bringing out the Druids, and where you see Crews fitting into NXT upon his return from the main roster?
Yeah, this match was more kind of the wackiness, you know, in the theme of the Halloween Havoc with Apollo Crews a little bit channeling the Undertaker with the Druids bringing out the next casket. since Apollo Crews went through the lid and, you know, that I guess that wasn't the finish. I mean, it's a curious thing. You know, if you're going through the lid, I mean, should that count as, you know, that they're in the casket or not? Obviously, the referees chose not. And that led to Apollo Crews, you know, spawning the druids who brought down an even bigger size casket. And, you know, I think that there was some good back and forth in this match. But honestly, I mean, I think a lot of people would have liked to have just seen, you know, a straight up match between Crews and Waller. But obviously being Halloween Havoc, they got the Chucky theme, spin the wheel, make the deal, ends up being the casket match. So overall that was fine, but I like Crews, you know, better in NXT. Obviously he was getting pretty lost on the main roster, but yeah, definitely some interesting choices with the character direction of being able to a little bit see the future. I mean, a lot of, you know, the build up video packages for this match, you get the idea that Apollo Crews likes journaling and self-reflecting and, he's been able to see something about himself, you know, in NXT that he thinks he has some unfinished business here. So, you know, I do hope the best for Apollo Crews because I think that there is a lot of talent there, and just for whatever reason, you know, getting lost in the shuffle on the main roster, that he can really find some footing and define his character a little bit more and potentially build himself up to, you know, a higher level in NXT.
And you mentioned The Undertaker earlier. There were a couple nods to Undertaker spots. There was a teased tombstone. There was the sit-up by Grayson Waller and then the sit-up by Apollo Crews, which, you know, kind of aped the Brock Lesnar, the very infamous now Brock Lesnar Undertaker sit-up laughing spot, I think, that has been memed out there at will on Twitter. So a couple spots, certainly a nod to The Undertaker, which, again, you wouldn't necessarily think of in a Crews versus Waller match that there would be Undertaker tribute spots in those, but here we are. The third match was Roxanne Perez versus Cora Jade. Roxanne Perez getting the victory in a Weapons Wild match, just kind of a hardcore match here. Do you see this as the end to this feud right now? I mean, we saw Roxanne Perez get an opportunity on the main roster on SmackDown a couple weeks ago, so not a surprise that she wins here. But do you see this as the end of the feud, or do you see them continuing on? Because this has been quite a heated feud and a long feud by NXT women's feud standards that don't have the NXT title involved.
Yeah, I mean, this one's been going on for quite some time. I think it's been going on for about 3 months now. And, you know, the match was fine overall. You know, it's Weapons Wild match, so they had to use a lot of different weapons and stuff and just throwing a lot of stuff at each other back and forth. There was one point in time where they had got onto, you know, a platform, an elevated platform, and Roxanne Perez was in the moment of, you know, about to push Cora Jade off of this platform and through a table, and said Roxanne Perez kind of took herself and almost both of them just kind of went through the table together. I think this was the right finish with Roxanne Perez. I think a lot of people see her as, you know, one of the main future stars of the women's division in this Heat brand. And I think that given her age and Cora and Jade's age, I mean, it's really impressive, you know, what those two have been able to put together in the short amount of time that they've been training. And I don't know if Roxanne Perez at this point in time is really ready for the main roster position. I think that she's really solid, like I said, for her experience and for her age, but I'd like to see her continue a little bit more in NXT and possibly be that person to take that championship from Mandy Rose and, you know, get some experience being in an elevated spot on this brand, since NXT is supposed to be developmental, and just kind of let her run with it for a little bit. You know, I don't know if right now is the moment for Perez to go right after Mandy Rose, but I think we're getting a lot closer to that. You know, and kind of put her in that position and just get some more experience against different competitors. And then I think she'd be in really good shape heading up to the main roster.
I get wanting to do a weapons match, especially if this is the end of the feud. You know, you build it up for the big stipulation match. But in some ways, like, you kind of feel like you're missing out on what could be a better match. I think the weapons, while oftentimes they can make a match better, I thought in a match like this with Perez and Jade, they were super comfortable using the weapons. There were lots of, you know, awkward pauses. There were lots of waiting to use the weapons. Even falling off the platform was kind of awkwardly done. So you kind of feel like you missed out on a genuine grudge match inside the ropes, bell to bell, to really see what these two women can do when given a big spotlight opportunity, and instead they're thrown in here with these weapons, which makes the match a lot more awkward than it otherwise would have been. Is that a feeling you got too, or does the fact that, you know, the weapons are being involved in perhaps the potential blow-off of this feud just make it seem more important?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you, Greg, but I think that, you know, a few of these matches on this show, I felt were a little bit hindered by having those stipulations of having the hardcoreness and having to use the weapons, where I really would have preferred to just see, you know, in the ring, bell to bell, of them going against each other. And I think that Perez and Cora Jade were much more capable of having a better in-ring match, where obviously they weren't totally secure using the weapons, because that's kind of a new territory for both of them. And I think the idea was to do a weapons match because this was a heated rivalry and kind of make this the blow off, the big thing of using weapons going back and forth. But to your point, I think that there still is a good match between the two of them, just straight up as a singles match. And so that there could be a follow-up, you know, if, you know, Sean and the NXT crew feel the same way about it, that, you know, maybe they weren't as confident and it didn't come off the way that they had intended to, that there is definitely a possibility that these two could just have a singles match, you know, on a regular NXT show.
We'll pause right there in our discussion of Saturday night's Halloween Havoc PLE, and we'll go to the phones. Remember, if you want to be a part of the show, 515-605-9345. Press 1 to show up in the queue to talk, and we'll put you on air with your questions or comments, or you can email us anytime, wnialivecast@gmail.com. First up tonight, it is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Good evening, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing well, Reverend Keith. Good to hear from you tonight.
Good. Well, listen, I have to say this is the first time ever that I've agreed totally with you guys, so I might as well hang up now, man, because I have nothing to give.
Oh, wow.
Listen.
I find that hard to believe, Reverend Keith. I think you can find something to chat with us about.
You know that's right. But listen, I must say this, that I was looking forward to straight-up wrestling matches. I understood the Halloween theme and so forth, and we know the history of Halloween Havoc as it dates back to WCW days. But I think that they overdid the gimmick matches last night, like you guys have already stated. I'm in total agreement, because I would have loved to have seen Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade in a straight-up one-on-one. I would have preferred to have seen the women's title match in a straight-up one-on-one, because like you guys just said, that situation with the whole abduction of Toxic Attraction didn't pay off for Alba Fire. So what was the point, you know? And then when you look at the time of the match only lasted like 7 minutes once they actually got to wrestling in the ring, Mandy and Alba Fire. So I think that they overdid the gimmicks. And hopefully they'll continue to feud with Alba Fire because she deserves at least a straight-up one-on-one. What are your thoughts on continuing the feud, or do you think that they will move forward to Nikita Lyons?
Yeah, I would think that, you know, I think that like we mentioned with a lot of these matches, that they're kind of hindered by some of the gimmicks. And I think that they're is potential for them again, you know, just like we were saying, Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade, for them to do another straight-up match. But, you know, honestly, I felt that the kind of haunted house horror gimmick hurt Alba Fire a bit because, like you said, Reverend Keith, that, you know, she brought Toxic Attraction there, and then they still showed up. You know, they still showed up during the match and helped Mandy Rose retain the championship. So it didn't really work for her. So they could do something again where they try to keep Toxic Attraction out of it, you know, if that's where they want to go, and, you know, if they want to have Alba Fire win the championship. But I don't think that that's, you know, who they want to have take that from Mandy Rose, since she's been the champion for almost a year now. So honestly, if it were me booking, I would just pivot away from Alba Fire at this point and go to, you know, a Nikita Lyons, and then you can go to a Roxanne Perez from there. I just don't think that I'm not as excited to see a rematch from them, you know, given the Haunted House part of it and then the actual match that followed it.
So who would you suggest be the next contender for Mandy's title?
Well, like you suggested, I think that you could do something with Nikita Lyons. I mean, we haven't seen her featured as much, you know, in the past weeks, but you could do something with that, with her. But I think ultimately the direction that they should be going is with Roxanne Perez. But I think that she's going to need some more time to feel more confident and get a little bit more solid in the ring. But I could totally see her as being that kind of underdog person to finally knock off Mandy Rose.
Now I want to pivot to the main event. This was a tremendous triple threat match. I mean, I think these three men overachieved. I was not expecting this match to go in this direction, and I was pleasantly surprised. We all know that Ilya Dragunov can bring it, and he can take a lot of punishment, and he fights well from underneath. But Bron Breakker took his wrestling skills to another level last night, and I saw the finish coming when Ilya was in the corner and he kept getting the crowd behind him, and then finally he ran into a spear. But in between, from bell to bell, all three of these guys really, to me, that was a five-star match. I don't know what Dave Meltzer would rate it on Wrestling Observer, but I felt that was a five-star match. I think that it made Bron Breakker's title reign that much more superior, considering some of his previous title defenses. But I thought that was an excellent way to end the show, because the show, to me, underachieved and was very lackluster until that point. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you, Reverend Keith, that I was blown away by this match. I mean, as we all know, that Ilya Dragunov and JD McDonagh are just superior, great wrestlers. And you knew that what you were going to get from them was going to be just great, hard-hitting stuff. But Bron Breakker, I mean, he has come a long way. That he, you know, has always had that spark in him and showing that he can be, you know, a future star. But, I mean, the last big match for Bron Breakker that I kind of remember being a little disappointing was that one against Dolph Ziggler, you know, where Ziggler retained the championship at that Stand and Deliver show. And I was kind of wondering, you know, where does Bron Breakker go from here? And the guy just has a charisma about him that stands out just so much above everybody else on the regular NXT roster. I mean, he looks like he is somebody that you could definitely pluck from this and put him on the main roster, and he would absolutely succeed, you know, provided that you give him at least a fair shake in the booking there. But,
and all right,
you know, he...
Gentlemen, if I can interrupt, I am back. I appreciate that. Not sure what happened there. Lost connection for whatever reason, but I am back, and I see that you guys have continued on in my stead, which is perfect.
Yes.
But so we're talking Bron Breakker, and we're talking Ilya Dragunov, I assume.
Yes.
If I can jump in and just kind of and tell me if you guys have already covered this, but any surprise in Dragunov taking the pin there at the end?
Yes.
Not for me. I thought they want to go with JD McDonagh, you know, as kind of a next big heel in NXT, and I think that you could definitely feud with Bron Breakker and JD McDonagh being the two, you know, doing a one-on-one feud going from here.
Yeah, Reverend Keith, go ahead with your thoughts.
I feel the same way. I was truly shocked because I thought that they would pivot to the one-on-one between Ilya and Bron. I think that that would be a good match for a special NXT on a Tuesday night. And I was really shocked that Ilya took the pin. So now it'll be interesting to see which way they go from here. I'm curious to see if Ilya will be the next challenger, or will someone else step up to challenge Bron? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting one, because we've already seen JD McDonagh get a one-on-one match and lose. So it felt like, you know, with Dragunov's first opportunity at Breaker coming in a triple threat match, it would make sense then to have JD McDonagh lose and then eventually go to Breaker versus Dragunov as a one-on-one match. And it doesn't look like that's the case here, which is kind of surprising given the pomp and circumstance they gave Dragunov's return. I don't know. Joel, who do you see as perhaps getting the next opportunity at Breaker? And I believe they did announce on this PLE that the next NXT show would be in December. So, you know, unless Bron Breakker defends his title on a special edition of NXT TV, that might be the next time he has to defend that title.
Yeah, nobody really jumps off the page in terms of, you know, who is that next huge kind of one-on-one match. Like you mentioned before, that Bron Breakker and JD McDonagh have already had that match, but I still think that there's a little more to squeeze out of that. But I think that you definitely could do another JD McDonagh Bron Breakker match down the road if it's if it's at the next event or further down. And Ilya Dragunov, like you said, there's an opportunity there also to do a one-on-one match with them. But I think that if they're not ready to break away from Bron Breakker and give that championship to Ilya, it might not be a bad idea for Ilya to go off and do something else at that point. But, you know, when you look at who is on this card here, I mean, nobody really stands out as that next big-time challenger for Bron Breakker that, you know, potentially because they're going up against that ROH show, could it be another opportunity for them to bring down somebody from the main roster and go against Bron Breakker at that point? I don't think that would be a bad idea, provided it is the right person and the story makes sense.
All right, Reverend Keith, anything else for us tonight?
I must add that the opener for the North American heavyweight title was also a banger. I mentioned that I felt that ratings-wise, the main event, which we just discussed, was a five-star match. I would give this 4.5 stars, and I'm so happy for Wes Lee. I don't know if you and Joel saw the Twitter account from backstage when he went through Gorilla and he ran into Shawn Michaels' arms and he cried. And, you know, this was a feel-good moment for Wes. You know what he went through losing the services of his tag team partner, Zachary Wentz, and they had him rise up from the ashes, so to speak, pardon the pun. It was a feel-good moment because he had gone from being down low, and now he's overcome, and now he's a champion. So it was a feel-good moment. It was a great way to kick off the premium live event last night, and I thought those were the two best matches on the card. Give me your thoughts once again. Thank you guys for taking my call. Have a blessed week.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. And, yeah, Joel mentioned that post of Wes Lee and Shawn Michaels after the event took place or after the match took place. And I think that's, you know, I mentioned how Wes Lee was kind of lost in the aftermath of losing his tag team partner, Joel. But I do think this is a nice redemption story where Wes Lee wins the NXT North American title. He overcomes everything that had been holding him back, all the missteps that had taken place in the time since he had lost his partner and not being able to get on track as a singles star. So, you know, if they continue to hammer that home in the coming weeks, I think you have a burgeoning star on your hands in Wes Lee.
Yeah, like you mentioned before, is that there's a real likability factor with Wes Lee, and the guy can just go in the ring. I mean, some of the matches that I've even seen on the indie scene from Wes Lee and Zachary Wentz when they were together, I mean, it's just some really blowaway stuff. And I believe that Wes Lee has got to have a really good singles run inside of him. You know, he is definitely adjusting to the, not being in the tag team scene and trying to be a single star on his own. But I think that this was a great setup for that, that I think that all the emotion that was running through him to winning the championship, to the backstage stuff, that I think he's going to ride a lot of that momentum. And I think that if you can get him in the right program moving forward, that this could do a lot of stuff for him. And I mentioned that somebody he could go against could be like a Nathan Frazier, and they could just have some unbelievable back and forth type matches, which is really just going to get both those guys noticed on the brand.
For sure. Let's dive back into Halloween Havoc here and go with – we had a segment with the host, Shotzi, and Quincy Elliott. So, again, going back to Shotzi hosting, which she did at the first very successful Halloween Havoc that NXT had, and she was joined by Quincy Elliott. Lash Legend tried to interrupt, and she got put down. So I was hoping for a little more with Shotzi and Quincy Elliott. I think they could have done a little more fun stuff than we got. I think this is the only segment I recall us getting, unless, you know, I'm watching on the non-premium tier of Peacock. So while some people get other WWE related stuff, I just tend to get commercials. So I'm not sure if they had done other stuff during that time. But, you know, I thought they, given Shotzi's relationship to Halloween Havoc and her hosting the first one, I thought they could have gotten a little more out of her being the host of this one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, Shotzi definitely works to be in this type of role. You know, she loves Halloween. That's part of her brand. You know, she did come out at the beginning of the show to introduce people to Halloween Havoc, where she was dressed up as the Joker, and Quincy was there as well. And then she came back, and she was dressed up as Beetlejuice. So kind of a fun back and forth. If you want to do some kind of fun stuff with the Halloween theming of this type of show, I think these are some good ways to do that. You know, if you want to avoid some of the B-movie and the weapons type stuff, which is not going to lead to, you know, a ton of violence being NXT, that I think that you can go with some of that Halloween fun doing these things like they did with Shotzi. And coming out of this, you know, Shotzi is going to have a match back on NXT against Lash Legend on this coming Tuesday show. So I think, you know, Shotzi has regularly been on SmackDown and WWE, but I don't think it's a bad thing for her to come back to NXT, you know, and at least have a little bit of a run there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's not. It's not like she's in the title hunt in on SmackDown. So I think she comes across as a bigger star, too, in NXT than she does on the main roster. Match number four, Julius Creed over Damon Kemp in an ambulance match. The stipulation was that if Julius lost, his brother Brutus would be excommunicated from NXT. And this was an opportunity to sort of a litmus test, if you will, for Julius Creed, because I think he's seen by many people as the star of the Creed Brothers tag team. Eventually, way, way down the line, a big singles push in his future probably. So this was an opportunity to see where he stood as a singles guy. And I thought it was a good match. I thought the emotion hit the right notes against Damon Kemp here, and you kind of feel the disgust each had with each other as Diamond Mine came to blows here. And, you know, it was also a good opportunity for Damon Kemp. You know, he's sort of living in the shadow of his brother, Gable Steveson, who has reportedly come to the Performance Center to train full-time. And this was sort of a breakout performance from both guys in a way.
Yeah, I think that both these guys really delivered in this match. Like you mentioned, that they got the emotion out of it that they wanted to. You know, really tying the story together for the Diamond Mine. One of the surprising things was is we didn't get any Roderick Strong, you know, still selling that injury. I thought that there was a possibility of maybe seeing an appearance there. But, you know, they kept it between those two guys. And I think that Julius Creed and Damon Kemp, they both really have embraced that kind of WWE type of style. And I think they do a good job with it. You know, an ambulance match is not – you know, it seems like it'd be like an easier type of match, but pulling off the drama for this is not always the easiest thing of trying to put somebody into something and shut the door like they didn't had to do in the casket match earlier, is that you have to be creative about it and be really good at selling that type of drama for the conclusion, because you're not going for pinfalls inside of the ring. And I think that there was some really highlighting moments, you know, where Julius Creed just went crazy on Damon Kemp and powerbombed him onto the gurney and, you know, and then carried him all the way to the back and threw him into the ambulance. I thought it was also great, you know, when Julius Creed was really doing anything he could to save his brother's career, where he was even just, like, holding onto the door and allowing Damon Kemp to just slam the door right onto his hands and onto his fingertips, just embracing the pain so that he could just fight for his brother there. And I think that all that drama really worked there and overall really pulled off this match.
the semi-main event was the culmination of the Mandy Rose Elba Fire storyline that had been woven throughout this show. Mandy won to retain, although Elba Fire had a very clear pinfall. And as Reverend Keith mentioned, Toxic Attraction came out, provided the distraction, provided the ability for Mandy Rose to retain here against Elba Fire. So Mandy has championed for a long time. Do you think that it says something about NXT's view of Elba Fire that they allowed her to get such a long visual pinfall on Mandy Rose before Mandy ended up retaining? And you know, do you think we get a rematch here because of that?
Well, definitely Elba has a claim to a rematch because of that, you know, and also the interference again from Toxic Attraction. So they could definitely run this one back. You know, I wasn't too impressed with the actual in-ring between the two of them, so I wouldn't be too excited about seeing a rematch between them. But storyline-wise, you know, it would make sense if they did something, you know, I don't know, cage match, something that would, you know, keep out Toxic Attraction between those two if they felt that, you know, the women, that the feud between them was strong enough to warrant that type of stipulation. But as I talked about with Reverend Keith before, is that I, at this point, I would probably just pivot with Mandy to going into a feud with somebody else. Could be Nikita Lyons, you know, but ultimately I think that you got to have your eye on Roxanne Perez and figure out a way how you can have her be the one who's going to dethrone Mandy Rose, because she's had such a long reign that you really want to make that count for when that championship change does happen. And I just don't think that Elba Fire is the one to do that.
Do you have any ideas about who that might be that does end up ending Mandy Rose's run as champion?
You know, I've mentioned it a couple times before, is that obviously the one I have my eyes on would be Roxanne Perez, because there just really doesn't seem to be that many other people who are jumping out. But I just don't think that at this point in time that, you know, that she should be winning that championship, that I don't think that it's right now is the perfect time to do that, that I still think that there's some more experience she needs to get before there is the title run and all the pressure that comes with that. So I think that there's other places you can go as far as Mandy defending that championship and trying to buy yourself some more time before you ultimately get to that match. But really, there just doesn't seem to be anybody else who it would make sense and be a big enough deal for them to win that championship right now from Mandy.
In the main event, Bron Breakker defeated JD McDonagh and Ilya Dragunov to retain the NXT championship. Pinning Dragunov, as we talked about with Reverend Keith. Anything more to add? I mean, Reverend Keith spoke glowingly of this match. Did you see it the same way he did in terms of how well he received it?
Yeah, I thought this was a great match. You know, I'm not one of the people who's I am one of the people who's not a big fan of the triple threat types of matches where, you know, somebody has to, there's only two people who are really fighting at the same time, and then somebody else has to go sell in the corner. But I think that they really pulled this off, that Bron Breakker has really proven to people at this point that he's able to carry himself in a match, that he doesn't need to be carried by another worker or doing a lot of selling in there, that I think he can really bring it to the table at this point. And, you know, one of the big spots that really stands out from this match was that Frankensteiner into a powerbomb. It was just such a cool visual to see. And I think that, you know, just adding on to what I said before, is that Bron Breakker just has this great charisma about him that he just really stands out above everybody else on the NXT roster. Where you could seriously take him from NXT and put him on the main roster, and he would totally fit in there.
Do you have a time frame when you see him on the main roster permanently?
I could see by next WrestleMania, you know, depending on where they are at with different things. I think that we're much closer to it than further away. That I think that it's you could say kind of around WrestleMania time that maybe it's like, hey, he has the big send off at Stand and Deliver, and then you do the Raw after WrestleMania type thing. I think that would work out really well because he's really starting to build a name for himself where people would recognize him once he does appear on the roster, that it wouldn't just be, oh, hey, here's another guy from our third brand, that it could actually be a really impactful thing if it's done the right way and they give it the correct focus.
Mm-hmm. So that was NXT Halloween Havoc. Again, two big shows coming up next month that we'll touch on a little bit later. But first, we go to the phones, and it's Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hi. My first question is, I don't know if you have any info on this or any speculation. Do you think the mystery wrestler will be who wrestles in Ricky Steamboat's retirement match?
Yeah, I don't know. I know he had turned down the spot opposite Ric Flair in Flair's retirement match. Trying to think of what wrestler from Steamboat's era would face him. And that's the hard thing, too. You don't know if it's going to be someone from his era, a longtime opponent perhaps, or if it's a new wrestler who can, you know, kind of create movement for Steamboat and, you know, make him look good. You got to remember, I mean, Steamboat's bread and butter was not his character. It was not his mic work. It was his in-ring. So if he's going to go out, he's going to want to go out with the best match he can have. And I don't know if anyone from his era that's still around is going to be able to share the ring with him to that end. So, Joel, do you have any ideas on who it could – I mean, it could be – if it's not someone from his era, it could be literally anyone on the independent scene. It would have to be someone, obviously, that Steamboat is comfortable with, someone that he handpicks naturally. But who knows who that could be?
Yeah, I think that it's very difficult to predict that at this point. I mean, do we know, is it for sure going to be a singles match, or is it going to be kind of the Ric Flair thing of, you know, piecing together a tag team match? And like you mentioned, it's really going to be who's available. You know, I would think that AEW would be open to allowing, you know, if somebody was asked from their roster to be that final opponent from Ricky Steamboat. I don't see any reason that Tony Khan would say no to that. Yeah, it would have to be somebody that I assume, yeah, like you said, Ricky Steamboat is comfortable with, somebody that he respects. And nobody at this point in time is really jumping off the page for me because you got to know, like, what are his limitations? You know, he obviously is not going to be doing huge high spots, you know, off the top ring post. I mean, at least I wouldn't think so. But, you know, it's definitely possible given a lot of the stuff that we've seen Sting do. But there's going to be a limit somewhere. So is it going to be somebody else who's going to create a lot of movement and a lot of athleticism? Is it someone who wants to create more of like a story with him? You know, I'm just not sure exactly what they're willing to go for at this point.
Ricky Steamboat is 69 years old, by the way. I think that's worth pointing out because
boy.
I think we think of him as being younger than he is. I mean, he's 69. So adjust your expectations accordingly. Ryan, back to you for your second question.
Second question is, I don't know if you've heard about this. I heard WWE is canceling a lot of lower-level house shows recently. And I know, like, back in my day, like, they would do, like, a house show even if it was, like, in front of 700 people. So is this, like, a Nick Khan decision, do you think, or is it more of a Triple H decision? And, like, have you heard anything about that?
No, I mean, obviously, I've heard about the canceling of house shows you know, that tickets are not selling well to. It makes sense. You know, perception is reality, and WWE may have at one time run in front of 700 people. They certainly did run in high school gyms and things like that. But if you want to be known as the worldwide leader in sports entertainment and you want to be the number one brand in professional wrestling, in sports entertainment, you can't run in front of that small of a crowd and let those photos be shared on social media and everything like that. So, you know, part of it, I think, is just it's not cost effective for WWE to do that, to run those arenas without reaching a certain threshold of ticket sales. But also, Joel, it's perception, and you don't want to be perceived as a company that's going to have their shows in front of such a small audience.
Definitely. I think that they're, I mean, obviously a big focus for them is to be perceived as the major league. you know, and they don't want to have anything out there that's going to have them look like they're anything less than that. And also they're obviously trying to turn a profit, you know, and that's going to be one of the biggest things to them, and especially in this Nick Khan era, is that they're constantly focused on, you know, how are they going to make money? What are their revenue streams going to be? And, you know, they've scaled back a lot on their house show business to where if you look at a lot of places that they're going, yeah, there's still some of the smaller, what you would consider the B or C towns, but they're still running a fair share of those of the house shows, you know, in some of the, you know, larger markets, you know, that they're still running, you know, the new Madison Square Garden stuff, Greensboro Coliseum, Cleveland, Miami, Toronto, you know, they're still running some house shows in those bigger areas too. And so they still want to be out there and still get the experience for all of them to, you know, to keep fresh and still, you know, work on their different programs that they're doing by doing those house shows in front of the smaller audiences. But, you know, they're going to be looking to actually make money on these events, that they're not going to run something where they think they're either going to break even or lose money.
And back to you, Ryan, for your third question and final question for us tonight.
Okay. Final question's on Austin Theory. I don't know if you heard about this, but I heard he wrestled Seth Rollins in the Street Fight. So were they, like, trying to experiment if he'd work well as a babyface? Because it seems quite odd because he's, like, very arrogant and comes off very cocky.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the house shows are just that. You know, you'll put a heel versus a heel and see what kind of reaction, who gets the reaction, and then, you know, maybe not next week or even next month, but down the line you kind of see what you have in baby faces. And really, Joel, I think that's what house shows are for. Like, I understand giving fans an up-close look at the people that they see on TV, but I also get experimenting every once in a while and saying, you know, let's do a heel versus heel mashup, see who the crowd reacts to better as a babyface, and just kind of keep that in the back of our minds for down the line. And the same thing for heel versus heel. Every once in a while, or babyface versus babyface, rather, and every once in a while, throw that on there. This is, you know, guys getting an opportunity to work against a variety of opponents, a variety of styles and things like that. So house shows can be beneficial for the wrestlers naturally to keep in shape, keep in ring shape, and keep up, you know, with what they need to. We've seen a number of injuries in AEW that could be attributed to not wrestling regularly and not having house shows to do that with. So I think there are a lot of good reasons to do house shows, and I think just that experimentation is one of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was just looking up to see what was the last time they did that match, and the last one I'm seeing was a Saturday night's main event on October 15th, so last weekend. And he was in the main event of a street fight against Seth Rollins. And obviously on that card, they still had Matt Riddle, so they could have ran that match. But they decided to do something a little bit different, you know, in a smaller city of Sioux City, Iowa, just to see kind of what that, you know, direction would be. And obviously Seth Rollins is an Iowa guy. So, you know, he's probably perceived more likely as a babyface being from that state. So I think that would make a little bit more sense as to why maybe specifically for there. But if they did it for more than just that event, like you said, yeah, that they're experimenting with that. Obviously, we saw a tease of the of cashing in that Money in the Bank last Tuesday on NXT, and we didn't see Austin Theory at all on the Halloween Havoc show. So to me, I also think, like, Triple H and WWE are still figuring out what they want to do with Austin Theory. Obviously, Vince, you know, had big plans for him, giving him that big spot at WrestleMania, having him be the Money in the Bank winner. And I think right now they're kind of recalibrating and really seeing, you know, where do they want to go with him? How far do they want to go with Austin Theory? Obviously, they still have plans for him, but, you know, to what extent is that going to be and in what sort of role?
All right, Ryan, thanks for the phone call this week. We'll hear from you next week.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing. Joel, as we kind of wind down here, just want to touch on the incident last week on AEW TV. We had Jon Moxley versus Hangman Page on a Tuesday night,
yeah.
Big AEW title main event of that show, and the match having to be stopped prematurely due to an injury to Adam Page, which I believe was later diagnosed as a concussion. you know, just unfortunate for Adam Page, because I think he's a babyface, and not that he was going to win the match and win the title there, but, you know, sort of running up against a wall every time, you know, there seems to be a certain spot that he can't get past. Even when he was champion, a lot of the discourse around that was how he was booked as champion. And, you know, you just feel for the guy because it just seems like he can't catch a break.
Absolutely. I mean, Hangman is just, he's a very talented guy. He still has a bright future in this business, but it's just been hard to get going, you know, on something that he has kind of fallen into a lot of bad luck in a lot of scenarios. And some of it has just been that it is bad luck, like it was in this case against Jon Moxley, where thankfully it wasn't, you know, as severe of an injury as we may have thought it was watching live. That it appears that he's just has a bad concussion, which obviously is still to be taken seriously, and he's going to need to take some time off for that. But we avoided any worst-case scenario, at least it seems like it at this point. And, you know, it's really a shame, too, because AEW needs big-time stars on their show. They do have a large roster, but as far as those kind of big time wrestlers that you can go to in those times of need, Hangman is one of those guys that they've had to fall on without having CM Punk or the Elite at this point. And, you know, to kind of pluck him off of the roster right now is going to be a challenging thing for them. You know, they're really putting a lot into Moxley, Jericho, and Danielson, relying on them to really be those leaders back there. But without having Hangman at this point, I mean, it's just going to be more of a challenge, and it's going to be harder for them to draw going forward.
After the match was stopped due to injury, it was announced that MJF would challenge for the AEW Championship at Full Gear on November 19th. What do you think about that as the main event of the pay-per-view? And, you know, obviously I'm sure that was not exactly how they were planning to announce it, but, you know, MJF cashing in his chip at Full Gear. What do you think about that main eventing that show?
A good strategy for AEW, since they only have quarterly pay-per-views, is that you should really go with what's the biggest match you can do at that time. And I think that MJF is the hottest character they have since he returned back at All Out. And the great performances on promos that he's done, that he's really taken himself to another level. And he's teasing, you know, a little bit of a babyface turn, and we'll kind of see how that plays out, whether he, you know, says that he said in this that he wants to win it the right way. And so instead of just cashing in his chip, you know, when Moxley's down, he actually wants to have a real set match for it. And, you know, obviously a lot of things changed with CM Punk, so maybe that wasn't the original way that they wanted to do that. Maybe it was that Grand Slam that they wanted to have this match. But nonetheless, you know, at this point in time, these are probably the two biggest stars that they have on the brand. And so that makes sense that they're going to headline the pay-per-view with it. It's a tough thing for Moxley, because Moxley has been through a lot of adversity. He's been the one that you can lean on during these difficult times, is that he wants to be that top star for the brand. He's someone who is consistent, who delivers really good matches. He brings that intensity. He really is the heart and soul of that AEW brand. And, you know, his real long-term as actual AEW champion was mostly in the pandemic era, of being at the mostly empty Daily's Place shows. And so a lot of people who are big fans of his wanted to see him have that full legitimate run, you know, actually touring as the champion. But as we remember, he was supposed to have some time off after All Out, but really Tony Khan had to call him back in because he was running short on stars, and went with Moxley as the champion to carry him through that time. So you'd like to see him have a longer run here, but, you know, perhaps it is MJF's time, because he is just the hottest thing that they have on the brand, and he can carry it on the microphone. He can carry it in the ring, and maybe now is the time to just run with him and see how far you can take it.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is the right match to have as your title match, as your main event. I think we're seeing, whether it's all a ruse or not, we're seeing this MJF character become three-dimensional, become multi-dimensional in a way you don't mm-hmm. see a lot of wrestling characters portrayed. And I think a lot of that probably is MJF's influence on it and what he wants to do with himself as a character. So I applaud him. I think the build-up is going to be really good between now and then. So that is the main event of Full Gear. Coming up on November 5th is Crown Jewel from Saudi Arabia, WWE's PLE. Roman Reigns against Logan Paul, the OC against Judgment Day, Brock Lesnar against Bobby Lashley, Braun Strowman against Omos, and Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross in a steel cage match. We'll talk more about this show in depth next week, match by match, and maybe some more matches added to it between now and then. But what's your impression of that card as it stands right now, Joel?
You know, honestly, it's not that bad of a card. I'm curious to see the Roman Reigns and Logan Paul. Logan Paul has wanted to be a babyface. He's been pushed as a babyface, but the crowd does not perceive him at all that way. And I think that Logan Paul, that there probably is some not understanding all of pro wrestling. I think that he's really athletic guy, and I think that he can do a lot of creative things in the ring, but as a character, I think he just doesn't – I think there is like a lack of understanding as to what the crowd looks for. That I think Logan Paul thinks that his story of himself getting famous on the internet is more inspiring than, a wrestling crowd as a wrestling crowd's going to perceive it, is that they think it's some guy who's kind of, he collects Pokemon cards and he's done crazy stuff on YouTube, and Logan Paul thinks that's really paying his dues and getting himself to the top, whereas less wrestling fans are used to wrestlers who have worked for years and years and years on the independent scene in front of small crowds, not making a whole lot of money, perfecting their craft of wrestling. And Logan Paul just obviously is never going to do that. But I'm curious to see, how he is in the ring, in his third, I believe it's his third professional wrestling match, to see, how has he progressed, and especially in such a big time match against Roman Reigns. Obviously Reigns is going to retain in this match and destroy Logan Paul. So that's part of the intrigue of this, is that they're getting you to buy a little bit that Logan Paul may have a chance. He's been talking about the Floyd Mayweather fight, and how he was able to go the distance with Floyd, and that he also wants to take it to Roman Reigns, who's the best in WWE right now. So they're giving you a little bit of hope, but I think that everybody knows that Roman is just going to destroy Logan Paul when it comes down to it. I also really like Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley, because, I thought that we were supposed to get a big match back at the Royal Rumble earlier this year. That was something that people had really looked forward to. And I think now here's an opportunity for Lashley and Lesnar to, actually have that type of back and forth big man type of match that they weren't really to have back at Royal Rumble, because a lot of stuff that they were trying to build for WrestleMania that kind of led to some shenanigans back and forth there. Braun Strowman versus Omos, is two big guys, and that one's just going to be an interesting one to watch. I feel that Braun has been really reinvigorated since he's come back to WWE, is that he seems to be taking this not so much for granted, that he's realizing that he does have a great opportunity here and he's trying to give it all that he can. But I don't expect him to have a great match against Omos, but I'm curious to see how it all plays out there. Maybe a guilty pleasure of mine. And then also, Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross. I think it's going to be a good match between those two. And then also the returning Gallows and Anderson are going to team with AJ Styles against the Judgment Day, which I think that can also be a pretty good match on this card.
Excellent. So, again, full preview of that will be coming next week right here, 8 p.m. Eastern on PWTorchDailyCast.com next Sunday night. So, Joel, we'll bid you adieu for tonight. Really appreciate you hopping on with us and good talking to you again. Go ahead and plug your social media and where people can find your work.
Yeah, so thanks again, Greg, for having me on here. It was nice to get back into the seat of talking some wrestling. I've been away for a little bit right now, just a lot of life stuff going on, and also, just CM Punk and all that stuff kind of was the needle that popped the balloon for me on wrestling a little bit, where I just had needed to take a little bit of a step back and focus on some other things, and not so much on wrestling. But, I'm hoping to get into a little bit more things here, talk a little bit more about it. I'm still on Twitter. You can find me at Joel Dunnell. Sporadically still talking about wrestling there. I'm still following AEW and a lot more of WWE lately. I feel that it's been a hot brand, and I'm trying to keep up with it as much as I can.
All right, Joel. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. Good talking to you.
Thanks again, Greg.
And don't forget to catch us next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com. Full preview of Crown Jewel coming up. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I am PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we'll talk to you again next week, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.